SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And here we are, the post-Derby weekend. The whole thing was a bit surreal on Saturday. And Friday was one thing when you knew you were, dealing with this odd absence, particularly for those in Louisville. You saw the pictures, you saw the commentaries and so forth. And you could just tell, that even if you've never been to Derby, even if you've never made the trip and had the experience, and it's something everybody that is a fan of the game should have, the post Derby day feeling, though, and maybe this is partly, and maybe it's just partly for me because of the the habit and practice that has gone on for a long time. Getting done and the little bit of post-Derby activity and then Tina and I getting in the car and starting to head north and trying to get, as close to halfway home as possible on Sunday. And then being here this morning, kind of wrung out and tired but exhilarated from the experience. Looking to recap, typically it takes, 4 days. It'll take the whole week to, go through Oaks and Derby recapping. There's so many angles. And then gearing up for heading to Baltimore. So it's just a very different experience, obviously. But what we were able to enjoy and what we did get was certainly engaging, and it certainly was enough of a Derby Day Saturday, first Saturday in May, set of activities, and first Friday too, because the fantasy and Kenny McPeak, who we'll talk to first regarding Swiss Skydiver, the Friday card was fun, and it was a great lead in just the way Oaks Day is to Derby Day. And then what transpired, at least through the magic of advanced deposit wagering, what transpired Saturday at Oaklawn, who went into the Arkansas Derby Oaklawn handicap day having established a wagering record around half of what they then proceeded to take in, $41 million. The number came up, started to come up Saturday evening, you just had to look at it and you knew it was going to be a big day. And what's funny, and I'll talk to Johnny, I'm curious about Johnny's thoughts and others this week, maybe Andy tomorrow too, of course, the Fox show chronicling the whole day. But in the final analysis, when it came to Saturday, it was not easy. I didn't think it was easy to, not that it was hard, you know, the handicap. I didn't think it was easy to make, you know, to really make the dots connect for, you know, for major wagering opportunities. And there were prices scattered around, particularly underneath, and then in the nightcap, which was a great way to get out, frankly, take charge Doro. But it was kind of funny because I, at least personally, was having trouble like latching onto a horse to key off of. Yeah, I typically like a middle price long shot type to, you know, to key, and they just weren't, you know, you're watching the board and really until that nightcap for me anyway, there really wasn't, you know, obvious horses. I took a couple of, you know, modest swings that didn't really, you know, go anywhere. The form I thought held, obviously, and I hope people appreciated, you know, the situation, which became obvious on Friday, that speed was holding, and it made the mention, you know, in the selections and in the analysis. I wanted to make it prominent at the top of the page that you needed to be aware Saturday. If you didn't really get a chance to play Friday, not that some horses didn't close successfully, because they did. There's no doubt you had horses come from off the pace, but there needed to be a serious pace for that to happen. You needed real speed up front for any potential for collapsing. But, you know, if horses were going to get to the lead and not have much resistance, they were going to go a long way. There's no doubt about that. And when it comes to, you know, the postscript analysis of Bob Baffert sweeping the two derbies, two very different kinds of performances, and two really interesting, talented horses in Charlatan and Nadal. Nadal just keeps doing things that are just, to me, impressive from a kind of an esoteric vantage point. What he's crafting career-wise to this point is kind of different. This is a horse that, you know, every time you watch him and you watch the replays, and now 4-for-4 for George Bolton, who was there. It was great that an owner could, you know, prominent owner, you know, in some of these races to be on hand. And you just watch him, you know, basically battle. And this was in some ways his best performance yet. And he's already, you know, done things that weren't necessarily expected, you know, including winning at 6.5 on his debut, even though he's gone favored and has been almost odds on, you know, in all of his races. He debuted at 6-5, and then 30 cents, 90 cents, 90 cents. But he battles, he fights, and he responds. And certainly Joel Rosario, with all the options that Ron Anderson is presented with, hard not to believe that Nadal isn't his Derby mount. Gonna have to wait. Everybody's got to stay healthy. Baffert invoking the references to bubble wrap, you know, with the scheduling uncertain. But Nadal very strong. Winning the second division, slightly faster time. It's so cool to have, you know, the 3 mile and an eighth races one after another. And in fact, what'd you have? I think five on the afternoon. So, you know, easy to kind of compare things. Just a huge Saturday for Baffert, for Joel Rosario. Talk about Charlatan in a minute. Don't want to let Gamine's performance and speech, the two of them, put on a tremendous show, which I think has been a little bit overshadowed, you know, in light of the other two. But Gamine and speech, and to be honest, Swiss Skydiver, it's just kind of interesting that we get to this point in the spring, and the three-year-old fillies, who looked kind of, you know, bereft as two-year-olds. We talked about this going into the weekend, you know, between the Gardenia Friday and the Fantasy. Well, 99 buyer for Swiss Skydiver, 98 for Gamine, 97 for Speech. I mean, they basically ran as fast. And granted, those were mile and a 16th races versus the mile and the eighth for the boys. But, you know, the boys, Nadal in 98 and Charlatan in 96. Charlatan, the questions are going to persist. We'll get back to Gamine and that nice allowance race as we go through the, you know, the conversations. Baffert in hour three, McPeak and Calhoun in hour one. But talk about by my standards in a second. Charlatan simply ran them off their feet. I mean, just broke running, and credit Martin Garcia for getting out of the gate like a pro, and also for holding Gamine together in the late stages. I mean, she looked like she was going to get confronted and passed, and Garcia really helped carry her to the line. Charlatan just ran them into the ground early, and people are saying, oh, it was so slow coming home. And yeah, if you're going to make people chase in 22-4, 46 flat, 109-3, if you're going to make, you know, horses, the ones that are trying to stay close, and give Basin credit. I mean, Basin, I surprised me. I was against Basin and was of a mind that he was, you know, going to get confirmed as maybe more of a, you know, a 7/8 to mile type closing sprinter. But they found something out clearly. Or at least went in with a more aggressive game plan with Basin. And it's interesting because after drawing inside in the Oaklawn and in the Rebel, being outside would may have actually been a positive, because by needing to gain position early, it actually, you know, got him immediately into the race, which is something that, you know, earlier in his career, and you think back to, you know, him at Saratoga last summer, he was in paces. He was involved early. And, you know, for him to carry himself out to a mile and an eighth, now granted, you know, Charlatan was running away from him at the end, but nobody else was able to get past. I mean, Gouverneur Morris, that was a shaky effort. I mean, if you know, he was sitting mid-pack, and if he couldn't get by Basin in that scenario, and Winning Impression kind of clunked up a little bit, but Charlatan just gutted them. And you know, if you want to watch, if you're fairly new to the game and you want to see something that you'll carry with you in terms of learning, you know, how a race unfolds, go watch the replay again. And when they're about midway on the backstretch and approaching you know, the halfway point of going, you know, actually past the halfway point of the race. And watch how Garcia is sitting chilly and Charlatan is just rolling along, and you're, you know, about basically halfway into the race, and the horses that are behind him are being asked and implored to keep up. And that, I mean, that to me was, you know, that was well in evidence and quite impressive. And that's what's so interesting about having these three races, you know, one after another at a mile and an eighth, because they were all very different. You know, by all rights, for the older horses, by my standards, with a very nice effort as well, Gabe Saez deserves credit, you know, from the 12 hole. And I'm anxious to talk to Baffert, taking Improbable, a healthy scratch, out of the race. And unless there was something else that was involved here, you know, the early word was that it was a healthy scratch. I don't see why Improbable would not have, you know, had every opportunity in here, because this was a very, you know, for older handicap horses, 23 flat, 46 and 4. This was Warrior's Charge, good effort, and it was a great couple of hours, for not even an hour and a half, for Marshall Graham. First, Warrior's Charge, second in this spot, and then Marshall in the last two races of the season, the last two races of the Express Bet Arkansas Derby Day contest. Marshall storms from, I think, seventh. I think with two races left, I noticed that he was seventh. And that was even after Warrior's Charge. It went off at 7-1, depending on how he bet Warrior's Charge. But he made a big move between the second division of the Arkansas Derby and the Nightcap to win. So congratulations to Marshall. But by my standards, you know, at that, with those splits, you know, he was in comfortable range, you know, basically stalking Warrior's Charge. And then when he confronted him, you know, Warrior's Charge hung in. Mr. Freeze, I don't know what Joe Talamo was, I don't know what the game plan was there, but for him to be, you know, given his free-running ability, I don't know why he was where he was. And he, you know, he loomed up, but, you know, by that point, with those splits, it wasn't to be. Trophy Chaser disappointed. My God, he had no excuse. That was a dismal performance. Chasing inside and you know, with those fractions, just absolutely collapsed. Tacitus did what he could. You know, he didn't get the pace that he's looking for. So, by my standards, on a roll, career best fig. Absolutely. You know, really, stamping himself with authority going forward into the late spring and summer. We'll see what Brett Calhoun is thinking about a slightly uncertain calendar. Now, we're gonna obviously get to the break here. McPeak's gonna start us off. Johnny later. Bob Baffert, Andrew Offerman's going to join us from Canterbury. And over the next several days, we're going to talk to several different tracks and get up to speed on where everybody is. expect to talk to Eric Hallstrom, Indiana, and Jim Lawson from Woodbine, etc. I'm out of time here to tell you other things, so we'll save some of it for when we come back. And as the morning unfolds, but things are starting to gel. The condition book for Churchill, Ben Huffman got that posted yesterday, and people getting excited about opening in, what, 12 to 14 days, 13 days? Let's take a break here. Ken McPeak starts us off.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old or 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm gonna write what I want you to do to me in a letter.
I'm
gonna write it for good, or for bad, or for worse, or for better.
Love letter.
I'm gonna write it for you so that you can be my lover.
Be my lover.
We're back at the races, 25 into hour one, coming out of the Arkansas Derby weekend, the Oaks Fantasy slash Derby, however you want to agglomerate all the different race standards, and one of the traditional great weekends. on the calendar in thoroughbred horse racing. Kenny McPeak brought Swiss Skydiver to Hot Springs for the fantasy. And even though, Kenny, when we talked, if I'm not mistaken, I was thinking about this this morning. When we talked after the Gulfstream win, I thought that you were kind of leaning toward, you know, pulling back with her a little bit and treading water. But she must have been doing good because you brought her to Hot Springs. And, boy, she ran just a jaw-dropping race. Congratulations.
And there so when they shifted it from April 11th to May 1st, oh, okay, yeah, we could do that, but we couldn't. We were going to have to run back in 13 days, and I didn't realize that they had rescheduled it to May 1st at the time.
Okay.
So that's all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, yeah, for $400,000, and I've got a hot commodity. I bet I probably ought to. Yeah, we definitely need to look at that. But they hadn't. I think they did it within a day or two after she had run that they rescheduled everything for the first week in May. So everything's a moving target right now. And we don't even have schedules
exactly
for the Ashland. We don't know what the Acorn's going to do. We don't have. We know when the Kentucky Oaks is, but that's 4 months away. And when a horse is doing good, you certainly don't sit and wait.
Well, and doing good she was, because, in fact, just looking at the, you know, at the workout tab, I mean, she fired that bullet in between, you know, two more maintenance-y kind of breezes. And when it came to the way in which you approach this, I mean, she'd already run a mile and a 16th at Fairgrounds, a mile and a 16th at Gulfstream. So, you know, that part of it is in your, you know, is already accomplished, and you know what to expect. But talk about this particular, you know, this particular race and the way this lineup came together. I mean, this was a serious group.
You know, it was a good group. You know, I think a lot of the horses that would have been teed up for the Kentucky Oaks, this was the spot that they went for. And you know, it's a great race in its own right. I think it probably ought to be upgraded after that. But anyway, that's something the committee will look at probably next year. But the timing, the shift in timing changed the complexion of the race too. And like I said, it wasn't even on the radar until they moved it.
From a pace standpoint, what was the anticipation? You drew inside, and she's seemingly a filly that is easy to manage. I mean, in terms of, you know, tactical speed, the wire to wire win with Paco, if I recall, you just said, you know, she broke sharp, and horses break sharp under Paco on a regular basis. And she was into the race, and why not at that point? But she doesn't have to have it. What were your thoughts, and what did you and Brian Hernandez Jr. talk about?
Well, anybody that watched her first career race, Tyler Gaffleone won on her, and she broke a little sluggish going 7/8, wiggled her way through the pack and drew off and won easy. I didn't have any doubt she could rate off horses. I think the race at Gulfstream, just the way it unfolded, a bunch of those riders just took back for some reason and gave him the lead. And, you know, she's fast enough, certainly in 49 and change was a ridiculous first half mile fraction to give her. She was, you know, good as gone after that. But, she doesn't have to eyeball, you know, have the front end. And there wasn't any reason to have to go eyeball to eyeball with that other horse. I told him, I said, just lay off and be patient and, you know, let her get in a nice rhythm and then make a run, because she's tactical. She'll do whatever you need her to do. And, you know, one of the things with me is that I probably lose first time out because I take a lot of my young horses off the pace on purpose. I want them to experience the dirt in their face. And I'm not a good good bet first time out, because it takes a pretty good horse to be able to catch a bunch of dirt in the face, get in between horses, or stalk outside and overcome, you know, what a good horse has to overcome. But I think it's a learning process, and when you teach them that, then you might get beat the first time out, but the long term experience leads you to what we got this past weekend, is a horse that was adaptable and knew what to do and didn't stress because she didn't get the lead. And she's a really talented filly. She didn't turn a hair over there. She's consummate professional at this stage. And fingers are crossed that we keep rolling. Have you heard what we were thinking about doing?
No.
Okay, so there's nothing on the U.S. calendar, and they're rescheduling the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket at the Rally Mile. No. And, you know, she's a filly that she's adaptable. You can do whatever you want to with her. I don't think running on grass is going to matter. I think she'll relish it. She's real balanced. She's hits the ground light. But we've done the nomination for the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket. Now, you think about it, they're unable to race over there right now. So anybody that's going to be going into this race, it's going to be their first race of the year. They basically haven't run since last fall. So here we have a filly that's sitting on go, and as long as she has a really good next few weeks, I'm going to fly her over there and run her in the 1,000 guineas. I mean, it's a grade one. It's a half a million pounds, which translates into $650,000 U.S. And, look. This is what it's about. You know, you get something like that going, it gives us plenty of time to come back for the Kentucky Oaks, because the Kentucky Oaks is 3 months later.
Sure. Yep.
You know, so it's a little different, a little out of the box, but, you know, I've been known to do that.
You have been known to do that. This is a filly that we discussed at the time, Daredevil, and it's just uncanny. I mean, that horse gets sent to Asia, or gets sent wherever, Turkey, and bingo, the graded stake wins start dropping, and this daughter of Daredevil out of the Johannesburg mare, bred by Windstar, $35,000 yearling purchase at Keeneland. And it was, from that standpoint, Kenny, it was a pretty encouraging 40 minutes, because Mac Robertson and they had won, meaning his father, Hugh Robertson had picked out that filly that won the Gardenia for $7,000. So between the two of them, $42,000 for two impressive stake winners back to back.
Yeah, no doubt. Hugh and Mac do a really good job of the auction. I track around and see them a lot at Keeneland and Fasig Tipton. They do an excellent job, for sure.
Talk about this. Bring us back to the purchase on her. And when did she? How far into the catalog was she?
2,000 or 3,000 hits in. I don't remember the exact hit number. I'll need to look it up, but. I don't get all enamored with the early session horses. For that matter, it's not unusual for me to skip the first couple of days because there's not a lot of value. And it's, those are great horses to have in your stable for sure, but the return on investment on a lot of those is really tough. And I have a lot of people that really want me to try to spend their money on a up-and-comer. And I tend to buy I'll buy the physicals on a young stallion and a young mare, and that's what this filly was. She was first crop stallion. I think she might be the second foal out of a Johannesburg mare. And I love the crosses. Daredevil had speed. Johannesburg's always a good influence, and she on the physical was impeccable. And so we scooped her up. I love doing that.
And I just looked it up to see, and these two fillies were within just a handful, a handful of hips, because Swiss Skydiver was hip 29.97. And Peace of My Heart, I looked up the other day after she won, she was like hip 3,060. I'll tell you right now. She was hip 3,064. Pretty funny. Book. She was in book
Tahana
four.
Run,
and
Tahana
I think
Run
yeah.
was over hip number 5,000.
Amazing.
She was way up in there. And that's Philly Pure Fun I bought for. She was 3,500 exactly. I remember that one. Curlin, he landed at about 1,500. So, you got a lot of horses to look at over there. We'll be doing it again this coming fall, too. Our nose to be to the grindstone first week in September, and it lasts pretty much the whole month since they've consolidated all these sales.
Right. And that's good. You know, we're going to talk to Boyd Browning again this morning, sadly, because of the passing Friday of Dennis Lynch. And it has been a very tough, I don't know, what is it, 18 months or even less between Bill Graves passing and Dennis Lynch here. But
Dennis, Boyd's great
guy. Joining us again.
And, good friend of mine, too.
Everybody, the people. People so sad, saddened by it, Kenny.
Yeah, he'd had a tough go lately, and just a really, really fine man. And he'll be missed for sure. He was a big part of the team over at Fasig Tipton, and big shoes to fill with Dennis. And I added him to my Angels list, and Bill's on there already too. And I got a feeling he was pulling for me this past weekend, even if I did buy it keenly.
You also made mention, I'm thinking back to the Gulfstream Oaks win, and you made mention that, you know, you'd had a little bit of a dry spell for Peter Callahan, and so nice for, you know, for things to really start to roll along for Peter.
Yeah, you know, great guy. You know, we had Beautician over the years. We've had a list of stake horses, and he gets it, though. It's such a humbling game. You go through crops where you buy horses you're optimistic about, and, you know, this one can't breathe or this one doesn't try. And you get all kinds of different versions of, the result. But he sticks with it. He's a stick with it guy, and he's real positive. And he's had a lot of health issues in the last few years. He's fought off lymphoma, and he a real peach of a man, and his daughters are very involved at this stage, which is really great. They're getting a real
nice
rush out of it. They watched the race on Zoom together. We said it was like being there. He said it was a blast. But he understands you've got to go through those lows to get to the highs, and sometimes the lows last longer than you wish. But he, like I said, he sticks with it. He's a long-term client for me and Runnymede Farm. I'd like to think he breeds this mare one day. That's one of the motivations of running it at Newmarket and 1,000 guineas is that it enhances her value as a mare even more if you don't relegate her to strictly dirt and you can win with her no Lasix.
Everything points to just a world of opportunity. This was the numbers. I mean, from a number standpoint, 99 buyers. She was the fastest 3-year-old of the weekend.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing that those numbers come back that way. The two horses that Bob ran are obviously so special. So for her even being in that realm is a big deal.
Well, Kenny, let me close out, too, by just touching base on, putting horses on the van and so forth. The horses from Oaklawn that they'll be arriving at Churchill the 17th, 18th, and 19th. Ben Huffman got the condition book up online yesterday. Talk about where, your runners are and how you're assembling and staging for this middle part of the year now with things starting to firm up a little bit better.
Well, you know, I've got his condition book that Ben got together in my lap right now, and I'm getting ready to do some horse math and figure out where everybody's going to go. We've got we're going to maintain the division at Gulfstream for the summer. I think it's a good second division for us, especially now that we've got the training center in Summerfield, Florida, just south of Ocala, and we're going to rotate some young horses from there and back and forth between Kentucky, and I think we get a lot of opportunities to choose some spots that are a little bit better for a group of horses. And we've got about 72-year-olds that are preparing in Summerfield right now, and those horses will have to be rotated between Kentucky and Gulfstream. So we've got quite a bit of work to do. I've got my drivers. We have our own trucking, so my drivers are ready to go, and it's going to be an interesting year. I'm really excited about not only the 3-year-olds but the twos, and we've still got some olders that are out there. Harvey Wallbanger and Sigma Man are both getting ready to find spots for them. But you'll see me most of the summer. I'll probably spend most of my time in Louisville, which is where I'm at now. And Saratoga is going to be interesting. I don't know what they're going to pull together up there, and if they do, I know that Riley Mott said that they haven't even let them ship in up there yet. So there's a lot of logistics in front of all of us, which is you know, part of the game. And hopefully we get settled and have a good summer, you know, late spring, summer as well.
Let me also ask about a couple of horses here and there. You mentioned Harvey, but some thoughts about Crypto Cash's try in the first division of the Arkansas Derby.
You know, I went into it knowing he was a Father, Son, Holy Ghost horse. He's not shown that he's that fast, but I thought it was a situation that it might set up for him. And I really hoped that somebody would press the early pace leader there, and then maybe would set up for a closer. But he's a nice horse. We'll get realistic with him. He was doing well going into it, and I think he split the field. But we'll probably look for either a 2-other-than allowance race or a small listed stake someplace if it comes up. Hopefully they have something like that at Churchill for 3-year-olds. But like I said, he's a nice, solid horse, but maybe not that caliber.
What's next for Signalman?
He grabbed a quarter pretty bad in his race at Turfway. He was third in that Kentucky Cup, the Kentucky Classic race. And we've had a little trouble getting that thing healed up, and he needs a quarter crack patch on it eventually. And then we've hesitated to breathe him until that thing was 100%. But I think you're going to see him to have a really good year as well. I mean, he's filled out and he looks fantastic. This issue is just a small short-term one that, you know, we all deal with on occasion. But he grabbed it bad enough that he went into the cornet band, and he got a little bit of a – he needs a little stitch there to make sure that thing's sturdy and doesn't split open. But a really nice horse to be around. And Tommy Lewis and all the partners on him are excited to have a good year. And we haven't been in any hurry because of everything going on, and we didn't have a book to point him towards anything anyway.
Let me also bring up a stakes runner from the weekend, those stakes at Gulfstream, and Envoutante, who had been a nice maiden winner and took an opportunity in that Honey Rider stake. And, you know, Dylan Davis tried to hold her together, got a little late there at the end and got swamped, ended up getting into the superfecta.
I wasn't real thrilled with all that. She was entered to run in the fantasy. She actually works with Swiss Skydiver, and they're good matches. And we didn't have enough money to get in, so we were opting over to the Gardenia. We entered in the Gardenia, and she got excluded from that as well. And then 5 scratched, which is hard to swallow. But we had her sitting on go. And the race at Gulfstream wasn't her preferred. I think she's a much better dirt horse. And so from the inside, I told Dylan, I said, sit still. I mean, he kind of rushed her to the first turn, and he tried to ride her in the middle of the turn. And I think she's a filly that could easily have laid third or fourth and then made one big run. But she'll go back to the dirt and probably never won two or any other than allowance race. I suspect in Kentucky, because the purses are good there, are going to be about $79,000 for those types of races. But she's going to be okay. We get her back to the dirt and get her back on form. And this is a filly that could very easily be in the Kentucky Oaks in the fall if we get it back together.
I'm going to ask you about one more filly. This one's looking for a win, and that China Horse Club homebred, the Medaglia d'Oro Renata. After the really solid debut, disappointed a little bit a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I guess she finished fourth. This is another one. I've been trying to get a two-turn dirt race for her, and it won't fill. And I don't know why, but at Gulfstream, they've had real trouble getting those races to fill. And they're riding a one-turn mile. I think they ran it yesterday. We're not interested in one-turn mile with her. I don't want to run her on the grass again. That turf course is a little tricky. If you don't have a clean trip, you can get in trouble real easy. I anticipate that once we get a two-turn dirt race, then we'll be in a good spot with her. And, you know, she's got a big future, too. And same thing, it wouldn't surprise me if we get her to the dirt, you'll see a whole different horse. And I'm not sure why that is. They've had trouble getting the two-turn dirt maidens, whether it's colts or fillies, all winter long to go down in Florida. And I've talked to Dave Bailey at length about it, and he said they just don't go in them. And, you know, these are the kind of races that we'll see at Churchill and Keeneland. And I probably train a horse more for a two-turn race than anything. So we're looking forward to getting those kind of spots, those opportunities for these horses.
Well, and she's an important horse for you, I imagine, and for China Horse Club. That dam, Tapas, it happens to be a half to Just Whistle Dixie, who has only managed to drop New Year's Day, Mohaman, Kingly, and Enforceable. And that filly is worth some serious money, I imagine, to China Horse Club, you know, from a prospect standpoint and a broodmare, you know, residual value down the road.
Yeah, they play on the high end with quality, and that's a good thing. And you love having clients like that. Anytime you're after those good quality stake horses, whether it's fillies or colts, I mean, it's all the better. And they gave me an opportunity with this one, and hopefully I get a few more behind it.
No, very nice, and we'll keep an eye. Renata is the name of that filly that we're talking about, R-E-N-A-T-A. Kenny, good things going on, and some free-thinking concepts to take Swiss Skydiver abroad, and with no real rush, we can understand it. And, in fact, she's had a sibling win on the grass. As it happens, so why not? It's a Ken McPeak thing to do, actually.
I've already talked to Wesley, and you know he and I kind of teamed up. When he first started going, I had gone before him. I went for the King George in 2004, and then he decided to go a couple 3 years after that, and called me and asked me, "Hey, what do you think? You know, will my horses run okay?" I said, "Look, take a good horse that doesn't bleed, and you'll be fine." And he's had so much success. He's a good friend. I actually reached out to him to see if I could get DeTori in the race. And he seemed to think that Gosden would have DeTori. And we'll probably let Brian Hernandez ride her back over there. I've already spoken to him. And if they're interested in going, we're going to let him ride her back more than likely. I think knowing the horse is going to be more important than knowing the course.
Just make sure he stays on when they open the gates, Kenny. Well, who was that? That was a disaster. What was that? Who was that?
Well, Rosalind stumbled leaving the gate. Daddy's little darling got loose in the post parade. But look, those are one in a million things. They're out of my control. I've been at this long enough that a lot can happen. And I've had, it's a game of failure. There's lots of ways to lose a horse race. So you just keep getting back up.
Sure.
I always like it. I told somebody one time, or I tell my clients, it's like unfair boxing. You get hit in the mouth seven times, and you hit them once, and it feels so good. You just say, oh, yeah, go ahead, hit me again. So you just got to keep at it. And you don't dwell on the losses, and you know what's the old saying? You can't win one if you're not in one. It takes character to race horses. You don't have and I love to tell that to all my new clients, the guys that are used to being winners at everything. Hey, you got to have character to do this. You have to have resilience. You have to be able to take a punch, and you have to be able to get back up and smile and keep going. And this whole thing we're doing right now is all it's this perspective of the coronavirus is, you know, horse people are resilient. There's a lot of us out there that okay, we'll get through this. You know, it'll be fine.
We've been driving that. I'm glad to hear you say it too, because we've been driving that point home that this industry and the people involved in it are uniquely qualified. Because they've all had things that, you know, that people wouldn't believe happen to them. And everybody's had, you know, tragedies and huge disappointments. And there's only one direction to go after them, and that's forward. And that's, that's what's made this whole situation, I don't want to say palatable, but, certainly racing is dealing with this better than most others, and we're going to continue. Kenny, well done, and Swiss Skydiver and more, and safe travels, family and everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you down the road and talk soon.
All right, thank you, sir.
Always great. Kenny McPeak, everybody. And you can follow Kenny on Twitter and Horse Races Now, his app as well. And we're going to stay right here because Brett Calhoun is standing by to talk about the older horse division performance of By My Standards, who absolutely comes back out of New Orleans and backs up the performance there with really an even better, a career best performance when it comes to the New Orleans Classic win, open lengths, and then again on Saturday in the Oaklawn Handicap. Brett Calhoun joins us. Congratulations to you and Mr. Thomas.
Thanks a lot, and good morning.
Brett, good morning. Gabe Saez, I thought, was brilliant in here and, able to set up shop from the outside, confront Warrior's Charge, stay within contact, and then, just move at will. Talk about preparations and the opportunity to sweep the two major handicap races at the Middle American winter season.
Yeah, I think you're right. Gabe was a big factor Saturday in the fact that how he was able to get him away from the gates and get him in position early on. That's really the only thing we discussed that morning. It's the only thing I really discussed with him. I told him, Gabe, I think the break's going to be crucial today from 12 post, and that track had been pretty speed biased throughout the day before. And was again on Saturday. So I thought it was crucial we get a good position going to the first turn. And honestly, I didn't think we could get that good a position. I didn't think he was fast enough from the gates to be able to get in that spot. So I thought that was a big factor. Going into the race, he's a really classy horse, and he always trains well and always works well. But I was teetering on if I was going to work in 5/8 or a half the week before, and it kind of got on my mind about thinking about the track that following weekend at Oaklawn, and I was thinking that it was possibly going to be a speed biased track, so I opted to work him a half and just try to get him a little bit sharper, and he worked brilliantly and galloped out huge, and then made the trip to Oaklawn in good shape. It's the first time he's banned anywhere to run, so that's always a question too. And he handled that very well, and obviously handled the racing service very well on Saturday.
You know, and I'm just looking, and I'm the first to admit that you know, I kind of blew it with him on Saturday, and I do see where going into the Classic, you can't call it the New Orleans Handicap anymore, but going into the Classic, you bulleted 47-2, and then, you know, the terrific effort. And then he actually followed up the win when you did bring him back, you know, gave him a couple of weeks off. And then he, two of his last three, two more bullets, including that 47 flat half, best of 106. And so clearly he was right on edge. And, you know, the pace for these kinds of horses, you had to be delighted when you saw those splits go up.
Well, like I said, I thought there was two or three solid speed horses in there. I thought they would have a very strong pace up front. I thought it could have even possibly been quicker than it was. I think the only thing I was confused by is that we were able to get that good a position early on. I thought Mr. Freeze would be up in the lead, and the Warriors horse would be right there with him. And I honestly thought we'd be shuffled back a little bit, but for him to get that position and look like he was comfortable once he got there, I just didn't want him to be in chase mode the whole time. And fortunately, we weren't. He got that position comfortably and then was able to finish well from there.
Yeah, I certainly agree about Mr. Freeze not, you know, being more involved. And you had to be thrilled. I'm just thinking about this too. You had to be thrilled that Baffert came out with Improbable, because every expectation would have been that he would have been on your outside and that he would have kind of left the gate running to try to gain position, which would only, you know, further add to the scrum into the first turn.
Yeah, with every time I face Improbable, it's always a bit of a wild card, because you know that he could be a part of a pace factor, but he's had his gate annex, and you don't know if he's going to get away cleanly or not, so you don't really know where he's going to be. You think if he's away sharp, he could be right up there on the front end. If he's not, he's going to be trying to get position, like you said, trying to make up ground. So, yeah. You know, he's a good horse, and you always have a lot of respect for him. But he always kind of makes you question the tactics and where he's going to be in any part of the race.
Well, there was never really, I thought, once they hit the eighth pole, it was pretty clear that by my standards was going to repeat. You know, some horses were trying to make up ground, but he, you know, finished through the wire. What, he went the last eighth in 12-3, and you know, comes back with a career best fig, his first triple digit buyer, a 102, and boy, now it's simply a matter of seeing where the races end up getting scheduled, Brett, and you can, you know, you can kind of just take it easy on him after these two wins. You know, talk about your perceived schedule working back from Keeneland and Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, obviously, I've spoken about trying to find a grade one for him. Unfortunately, they downgraded the Stephen Foster last year for the first year from a grade one down to a grade two. That race is going to be probably a probable race for us, even though it's a grade two instead of a grade one, because it kind of allows us to run out of our own stall and save a little horse for later in the year. I think that's a race that's on our radar. But, yeah, right now, not knowing when and where the races are, it's a bit confusing. And I hope in the coming weeks we'll get a clearer picture. But like you said, we're going to give him a few weeks and let him recover from that. And so we're not in any big hurry to get him to another race in him right now anyway. So by the time he's ready to go again, we'll have a clearer picture of where the rest of the races are.
Well, he's certainly made it clear that he's going to be a top the handicap division going forward, and follows up the New Orleans performance and actually the two wins in New Orleans. It's pretty notable. I mean, it's easy to put a line through the Derby when you think about it. He's won five of six. I mean, he broke his maiden in February, the Louisiana Derby win, you know, the Kentucky Derby where, you know, only one horse, or in this particular case, two horses can make a claim to win. And then three straight wins to start his four-year-old year. I mean, this is as you know, nice a resume, I would say, as any four-year-old in the country, Brett. I mean, that's fair to say. He's 5 for 9 with 2 seconds and a third.
Well, I've always thought that of him. I always thought he had a chance to be one of the top older horses. Obviously, I was crushed that we didn't get to finish up his three-year-old year and chase some of the derbies around the country and big three-year-old stakes. But when it was clear that we were going to miss most of that, we just gave him an extended time off. Playing for a four-year-old year, we thought he could be that kind of horse as a four-year-old. You know, just for me to sit here and talk about it and him to go out on the racetrack and perform and prove it, obviously are two different things. You know, he had trained super in the morning. He's always been a good workhorse. He kind of made himself a buzz horse last year going to the Derby.
Yep.
So he's always been a solid workhorse. But you know, going out and stepping up from 3 to 4 against the depth and quality of that field Saturday, I think really speaks volumes and was a big-time proving ground for him.
Well, and how'd they watch the race, the family?
Yeah, they had their own gathering at their house there in Kentucky and had family over and watched it there. He was very tempted to go to Oaklawn just to go, and they would allow him to walk to go in and watch that one race from an area, and then he decided at the end of the day just to stay at home, and so they just had a big party at their house.
Well, happy for them, and this horse continues to make very steady incremental improvement, and obviously, you know, is you know, still got improvement probably in him as a Golden Sense, and we don't even, you know, in Golden Sense, this is from his first crop, so we don't even know, you know, what the long-term upside is as they age. I mean, Golden Sense himself, you know, got better as an older horse, and this first crop son is really seemingly on his way. You talk about a grade one along the way here someplace, and by my standards, $150,000 OBS two-year-old purchase, and one of the handicap stars. I got to ask you also, Brett, about Ain't No Elmers, who found herself in a major deep water. Talk just a little bit about coming out of that group.
Yeah, you know, very deep quality field there. And obviously we were a little disappointed. I honestly had a lot of confidence going into the race, even though I thought there was several really, really nice horses in there. This filly had proven herself to be a pretty solid horse around one turn. To me, she had trained in the mornings and given me a lot of confidence that she would be able to accomplish the two turns. So obviously came out of that race with a lot of questions. I really don't have a clear idea of what to do next. Once you've stretched them out, you either have to, and didn't work, you have to make a decision that they're not going to go on the two turns, or you have to take a few factors in there and say, hey, you know, we got to give her another chance at this. You know, she didn't get away real sharp. She's a little wide, and she, Talmo thought he had the horse early on. We got to the 3/8 pole. He said she just kind of emptied out on him. With that being said, she didn't come back from the race exhausted. It was almost like she was confused or mentally didn't want to go around two turns. So we got to regroup with her and figure out what to do next. I know she's a really quality filly, at one turn, two turns, definitely still a big question. You don't catch fields like that too often in an allowance race. So you caught a filly that's probably going to be one of the Kentucky Oaks favorites at some point, and the filly that runs second was an accomplished filly. So, disappointing for us, but we'll regroup and figure things out here in the next few months.
Let's get caught up with a couple of others too, and obviously there's quality there. So give her some added experience and time to mature. But that is a race that between the 1-2 finishers, there's a lot of expectation going forward. And the race was obviously a very fast race. So we'll look ahead to Ain't No Elmers. What about Well Respected, who at the end of Fairgrounds, we got to get an update on Mr. Big News too, but that Well Respected, the Caracanti filly that kind of jumped up in that in that second start of the year, it looked like there's something to her.
Yeah, she was a filly before we ever started her. She had shown enough training in one of the dirt that you knew she was going to be a grass horse, so I told the owners, I said, look, she's not good enough on the dirt, but she's worked just good enough to make me think if she makes that move forward on the turf like she's supposed to, that she'll really be all right. Well, we put her on the grass first time out, and she basically looks like she's going to gallop around there last, doesn't do anything, and about the inside the eight ball, all of a sudden the light comes on, and she starts running through horses and over them, it was a very impressive race if you look back and watch that race. So we really were excited about going into the next race with her, and she didn't fire a jump the next time for whatever reason. We still don't really know. It had me scratching my head that maybe I got a little too excited about her off of the first race. And then comes back and runs the race that we expected out of her in the next spot. She's
going to
be very useful grass filly
in the future. Well Respected is her name. It's for the Conrads and Gainsway bred, $50,000 purchase. And keep an eye there. And let me ask about Mr. Big News and obviously Treading Water as well. What's the latest?
Well, now that the condition book at Churchill has come out and a few of their first stakes has come out. Obviously, we've got to take a look at the Matt Wynn. It's really not ideal for us because we'd like to be going farther. I certainly didn't change the distance on that race because it's a graded stake, and they may not could have done that. I don't know. But, being it's a mile 16 shorter than I'd like to, I really hate to back up at this point in time. Mm. They have not released the points for that race yet either, nor do we know whether there are any other point races really at this point in time. So I've got a very short period of time to figure it out. But there are some advantages. You're right there in your own backyard, leading out of his own stall, and to get a race over the Churchill down surface. So there's some positives and negatives, and we'll figure it out here in the next week or so.
Yeah, we'll watch for that. And by the way, before I get too far afield, because I do want to ask you about, how you're moving the horses around, I'm just looking down at Well Respected. Today's her birthday.
All right.
So she's exactly. Or get her a carrot cake and Well Respected. May 4th fall, and so today is her actual third birthday. I love it. It just jumped at me. I was looking down at her page at Equibase. Brett, where do you have the horses staged, and how are you dealing with the opening, and where you're going to keep them for now, and who's going where?
Well, it's a logistical nightmare, obviously. We were delayed several times getting into Churchill, and finally were able to get in starting on the 11th. Pleasantly surprised that they stepped up and we're going to be able to run the next weekend. So, you know, it's kind of a hurry up and get there situation at this point in time. And they're allowing horses in stages, so you had to have appointments to get there. So I've got a couple appointments on Monday morning, so we've got two loads going in Monday morning, and we've got about four more loads going in on Tuesday morning. On the it'll be the 11th and 12th, so we'll be set up there Tuesday and go from there. We're excited about getting back to Churchill and getting back racing.
No, everybody's excited and having, you know, that locked up and you know, able for people to, you know, to circle spots for their horses and write them in for the condition book. And I'm curious also, I'm going to do a survey pretty much this week and over like the next 2 weeks, really get everybody lined up. What you're a, you know, a Southwest standard. What do we know about Lone Star? How close are they to throwing a switch?
That's the million-dollar question. I thought we were going to learn that last week. And honestly, I thought they were going to be up and running about the same time that Churchill has now announced. I actually thought Lone Star would be up first. And that's kind of what we were hearing. And I don't know what the holdup has been. Hopefully we'll hear something any day. They are letting people move in today. We moved a large group of horses in there this morning. They're in transit right now. So we are going to have horses on the ground, and we'll fill that barn up in the next few days. But we don't have any racing date yet. So it's kind of getting me to hold back on a few other horses that I'm going to hang around some different spots, because I hate to ship them all up there if there's not going to be any races for them there earlier than where there might be someplace else.
All right. I'm glad I asked. And today we're going to find out about Canterbury. We're talking to Andrew Offerman and pretty much all the, you know, all the ovals over the next couple of days that we'll see where everybody, you know, what in concert with their state capitals and under, you know, advisement with officials. Brett, terrific performance by my standards, and taking advantage of, you know, the limited opportunities. You've only started, I think, four or five, maybe six horses since the end of Fairgrounds. So everybody's going to be fit and ready when the gates start to open in these other ovals.
Well, we hope. You know, it's kind of walking a tightrope. You didn't want to overdo it or underdo it, but we didn't have any idea when or where we're going to be racing. So, you know, you try to do enough to hold their fitness level and not do too much to just wear them out before we started racing, knowing that we didn't know at the point in time. So exactly. It'll be interesting, and I'm just happy there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, and it doesn't seem in this case that it's an oncoming train.
Right.
Fred Calhoun, everybody. And by my standards for Chester Thomas, who's got himself another just heady situation between Mr. Big News, and I didn't even ask about Mr. Money, and here's by my standards, now a two-time winner at four, yet three-time winner, but two-time stake winner. Things going very well, even with limited opportunities. Let's take a break. 15 minutes in to hour two. Johnny D is going to join us next. Boyd Browning later. Andrew Offerman as well. Bob Baffert. And Kim Weir. You know, tomorrow I told you about this new second Giving Tuesday that's been mounted around the world as a fundraising opportunity. Of course, the other one is in November, right, with Cyber Monday and then Giving Tuesday and all that. Well, this is obviously, you know, a situation everywhere that has created gaps and needs. And TRF hoping to raise a very manageable amount of money for grain. And Kim will join us before we wrap up today, so that you'll hear it again tomorrow on the replay, so that you can help with whatever you can spare. Not asking for a lot. Let's take a break. Johnny D. joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old or 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM.